If you're a business owner, you know these sounds mean sales. And from the sound of it, your business is growing. Whether you're fulfilling orders from your home office or warehouse, Stamps.com helps you stress less about mailing and shipping and spend more time doing what you love most. Listening to ASMR. I mean, growing your business. But as you grow, so does the need for efficiency. Stamps.com simplifies your shipping and mailing process. Import orders from wherever you sell online. Find the lowest rates with the fastest delivery times. Instantly deliver tracking updates to your customers. And buy shipping and mailing supplies when you run low. Save time and money on mailing and shipping. Get started at Stamps.com today with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Thursday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. And of course on YouTube, 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Got Michael Samter, Stuart Kovacs rock and rolling with me all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And Drew Bledsoe is going to stop by in an hour 20 from now. Okay, let's start the conversation today with the San Francisco 49ers, who have an enormous game this weekend. We all know there's more pressure on the Dallas Cowboys than the 49ers. We all know that the 49ers are a bona fide Super Bowl contender. They're one of the top three teams in the NFL. Some people would say they're the best team in football currently. I have them as the second best team in football. But when we're on this collision course for Sunday night with this heavyweight matchup between Dallas and San Francisco, the quarterback talk is going to be the biggest part of this conversation and the biggest part of the preview of this game. And when we look at Dak Prescott, we've done thousands of segments and thousands of shows debating, is Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback? Is Dak Prescott an elite quarterback? Is he a great quarterback? And I've been clear all throughout with my take on Dak Prescott. I think Dak is a good quarterback. I think Dak is a really, really, really good quarterback. But when push comes to shove, in a big moment, when the clock is winding down, final 2-3 minutes of a game, and the lights are the brightest, and you're in a big-time postseason game, I don't believe Dak Prescott is going to get the job done. And you've seen that the last 2 years up against the San Francisco 49ers. So this is a big test, and this is a big prove-it type of moment for Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys, where you don't win the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday night, and you don't punch your ticket to the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday night. But if you go out-duel the 49ers, then people are really going to start to take the Dallas Cowboys seriously. But on the other side, when you look at the 49ers, there's not a lot of flaws with this team. Even when you bring in a new defensive coordinator in Steve Wilks, you have a great defense for the 49ers. And we all know the type of player Nick Bosa is in the NFL. And you look at that offense, they're loaded with talent. With the offensive line anchored by Trent Williams, who's going to be a Hall of Famer. You have Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, a phenomenal 1-2 punch. You have a guy that could win the MVP this year in Christian McCaffrey. And I think he will most definitely, as long as he stays healthy, win the offensive player of the year in the NFL. But the biggest question with the San Francisco 49ers the last few years is what's going on with their quarterback. And through the first four games of the season, there starts to be that feel that finally the San Francisco 49ers have found their guy in Brock Purdy. And let me just say this right out of the gate. I'm going to ask you the question right now. Is Brock Purdy right now more of a system quarterback, or is he a franchise quarterback? And my answer right now on the fifth day of October in the year of 2023 is that Brock Purdy is more of a system quarterback. Now, that doesn't come, in my opinion, in a negative way. You know, I'm not knocking down Brock Purdy. And I know when people say system quarterback, it kind of feels like you're taking a shot and you're praising more of the team around him than the individual quarterback play. But I just haven't seen enough of Brock Purdy yet. I know he's never lost a game in which he started and finished. That goes for something. But he's never played a full season yet in the NFL. And also, I hear Kyle Shanahan, and we'll play you the audio coming up in a bit, where he goes, oh, it's ridiculous to say that Brock Purdy's a system quarterback. Why is it? Because, Kyle, the last few years, you basically have told us with your actions that the quarterback doesn't matter. And it's more so your system. Because Kyle Shanahan is the guy that walks to the roulette table and he gets hot on a number, rides it for 3-4 spins, and then goes to the next number. And he thinks that it's his sharp and erudite ability that's going to ultimately reign supreme and is ultimately going to prevail. And look how much he has vacillated between different quarterbacks. You go make Jimmy G one of the highest paid quarterbacks ever. Then you want to give up on Jimmy G. You flirt with Kirk Cousins. You don't get your guy Kirk Cousins. All right, it's back to Jimmy G. Jimmy G can't complete the throw to Emmanuel Sanders in the Super Bowl. Gets the ball batted down at the line of scrimmage by Chris Jones, Big Mitt. And the next thing you know, you go draft Trey Lance. And they move mountains to go get Trey Lance. There was also the Nick Mullins chapter in San Francisco, too, where he thought he could win with Nick Mullins. And we barely even saw Trey Lance hit the football field. And Trey Lance then gets traded to the Dallas Cowboys, and now it's all about Brock Purdy rocking out with this Brock out and looking pretty awesome. But that's where we're at right now with the 49ers. And this is the flavor of the month for the San Francisco 49ers. So it's not that Brock Purdy one day can't become a franchise quarterback. It's not as if I'm saying Brock Purdy can't be a great quarterback one day. But right now, Kyle Shanahan is asking Brock Purdy to just manage the game. That's what he's doing. He's like a great point guard in basketball that isn't going to lead the league in scoring. But what he's going to do is be great at pulling in rebounds, pulling in assists, and also just playing to the system that you're in where you have Christian McCaffrey, who's on his way to being the offensive player of the year, maybe an MVP. You have the 1-2 punch of Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. You have one of the better tight ends in the National Football League in Kittle. And you have a phenomenal offensive line. So it's not me knocking down Brock Purdy. And there's some stats that suggest that he's going to be a phenomenal quarterback. Like right now, he's on pace to have the second most touchdowns in the league in terms of running the football. If you go back to last year and see who had the most rushing touchdowns, which is Jalen Hurts. His numbers right now, what he's on pace for, if this was last year, he'd have the second most rushing touchdowns. If it was passing touchdowns, there would be 14 quarterbacks last year that would be in front of him. Because right now he's on pace to toss 21 passing touchdowns. And he is on pace to go for a little over 4,300 yards. And that would put him in as a top 10 quarterback last year in terms of passing yards in the NFL. And there were 7 quarterbacks that had more passing yards last year than what Brock Purdy is on pace to do this year. So there's some numbers that say he has the potential to be a franchise quarterback. There's some numbers that suggest, you know, Zach, you got to be fair and give him some individual credit as well. I'm not taken away from Brock Purdy. I'm not telling you that if it wasn't for Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy would be a bum. But I will say, if Brock Purdy was in New England right now with Kendrick Bourne and Juju Smith-Schuster and Mike Gesicki as his best options, are we even talking about Brock Purdy? No. If Brock Purdy swapped places with Daniel Jones right now, and he was on the Giants throwing a Jalen Hyatt, oh wait, they don't even use Jalen Hyatt, so I can't even say throwing a Jalen Hyatt, but if you look at the lack of weapons that the Giants have with Isaiah Hodgins, is Brock Purdy putting up these monster numbers? Probably not. And we talk about this all the time, and this is the inane part of the conversation. A quarterback has to be drafted in a good situation. And fortunately for Brock Purdy, being Mr. Irrelevant, he was drafted in a fantastic top 3 destination in the league. I just need to see more before I say that he could be the franchise guy. And I'll even look back to when Tom Brady first got into the league. When Tom Brady was winning Super Bowls early on in his career, did anyone say, oh yeah, Tom Brady is this elite quarterback in this league? Is this franchise quarterback in this league? Or is it more so he was playing to a system? And then as his career did progress, Tom Brady was the system. And then Tom Brady put up these prodigious numbers. Look at what he did a few years later. After winning 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, he broke the most passing touchdowns in a single season, tossed for 50 at the time, had 23 to Randy Moss, and he put up historical numbers. And you saw Tom Brady then win MVPs more and more because he developed as a quarterback. And that's the thing that I think a lot of us forget in the NFL is when you're not the all-that quarterback coming out of college, you're not the top pick coming out of college, you're given more time to show if you could excel. And a lot of those quarterbacks that are drafted on later in the draft, they get better and better because they had a lot more work to do than some of the quote-unquote great quarterbacks and the quarterbacks that were deserving of being a top 5 pick in the NFL. So I don't think it's a knock on Brock Purdy right now to call him a system quarterback. Because if you're a 49ers fan and you win the Super Bowl this year, I don't care what you call Brock Purdy. System quarterback, franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter. But with what he's being asked to do right now, he has a situation to go win a Super Bowl. And the 49ers absolutely could go win a Super Bowl. So it doesn't matter if Zach Gelb right now views him as a system quarterback. It doesn't. Because one day, that system tag can be taken away. And through more time, he could be elevated into the conversation as a franchise quarterback that looks like an elite quarterback in the NFL. But right now, he's just simply getting asked to do a point guard type of role at the quarterback position, and he hasn't messed it up. And look at the no turnovers. That's enormous right now. So he is deserving of extolment. He is deserving of praise. But I don't look at Brock Purdy and say he's definitely the reason why the 49ers could be going to the Super Bowl this year. I look at guys like McCaffrey. I look at guys like Debo, Kittle, Ayuk, the offensive line around him. And Brock's in a perfect situation right now where you just have to be an above-average game manager. If you're an above-average game manager, you could definitely win the Super Bowl this year with the San Francisco 49ers because you're playing to the system that has an excellent offensive-minded coach in Kyle Shanahan and abundance of talented players on the offensive side of the ball, and also, more importantly, an abundance of talented players on the defensive side of the ball. So I know that this is a slippery slope here. And I know it's a conversation where then 49ers fans will hear me and they'll go, oh, this is just Gelb, right? This is Gelb hating on the 49ers, trashing our guy, Brock Purdy, blah, blah, blah. I'm not trashing Brock Purdy. I'm just telling you what I've seen so far is that he's playing to the system perfectly. And that's all you could ask for. That's all 49ers have hoped could happen is be an above-average game manager to try to be the person that advances the ball across the goal line to bring that great organization back a Lombardi trophy. Let's hear from Kyle Shanahan because he was perturbed with the media for asking if Brock Purdy is a system quarterback or a franchise quarterback.
That's pretty ridiculous. You just got to watch the tape. I mean, he plays at a high level every time he's been out there. And he's done it in a lot of different situations versus a lot of different defenses. On the road, at home, in playoff games, when injured, you can't do all that stuff. He's been out there too long. It's on tape.
He's had a historical start to his career. We're now talking about, 5 games in the regular season last year, 2 in the postseason last year, and now 4 in the regular season, where in games that he started and finished, he has not lost. That's tremendous. He has completed the assignment. He's understood the assignment. But my point is, I'm not ready to say that this is a franchise quarterback, this is an elite quarterback yet, because I still think he's going to get so much better. And part of that is you need to get off to a good head start being in a great system. And say what you want about Shanahan and him not being able to win a big game yet, right? Talking about a Super Bowl as a head coach or as an offensive coordinator. But Kyle Shanahan puts his quarterback in a good situation. And so far, Jimmy G looked like he was taking him there, then fell flat on his face. Trey Lance really wasn't given the opportunity. Whatever happened behind the scenes, fell flat on his face. Purdy, to his credit, has taken the baton, and he's run with it. And if he could keep up playing this way, then they're going to definitely be a team that's going to be in it right at the end of the year and maybe hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. But I don't think it's a knock right now to say that he's a system quarterback because this is what Kyle Shanahan has designed. And if he is a franchise quarterback, then 4 or 5 years from now, he'll go out there and he'll show you that and he'll get better and better and better. And then there will be more individual praise for Brock Purdy. So do you view Brock Purdy right now as more of a system QB or a franchise QB? That's the poll question today. You can find it at CBS Sports Radio or at Zach Gelb. Early returns right now, 73.3% say system quarterback, 26.7% say franchise QB. We'll go to you on the phones next, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Also, when we return in 5 minutes, we'll react to some controversial comments from Giants offensive lineman Evan Neal. It is the Zach Gelb Show, off and running on a very busy Thursday right here on CBS Sports Radio. You can stream the NFL and Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone. All season long, you could listen to every Westwood One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging is available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. We open up the show talking about Brock Purdy. Is he right now more of a system quarterback or a franchise quarterback? We'll get to your thoughts in just a second. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. I did see something, though, that was extremely funny during the break that Brock Purdy revealed in an interview recently. And let me remind you, he makes $870,000 a year. And we all know how expensive it is to live in the Bay Area in San Francisco. Like, living in New York City in the financial district, people go, oh, that's an expensive place to live. And then you hear the prices about San Francisco, it blows the financial district and New York City out of the water in terms of how expensive it is to rent an apartment or to get a place in the Bay Area. And $870,000 is a pretty lucrative salary, if you ask me. But Brock Purdy recently revealed that he still has a roommate and he splits rent with that roommate, which I find hysterical because as someone... That's right, 29 years old. Brock Purdy's probably, what, 23 or something like that, right? I have a roommate as well, but I find it funny that the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, it's one thing when the talk show host Zach Gelb has a roommate in a New York City apartment, but when you're the quarterback of the 49ers and you could be playing in the Super Bowl this year and you were the talk of the NFC Championship game because you weren't able to stay healthy last year, unfortunately, when Hassan Reddick came off the edge and knocked you out of the game, and then you also were the talk of the NFL for the second half of the season. I would not expect him still living with the roommate, but hey, you also see the Arizona Diamondbacks, right? They advanced into the NLDS last night with their second victory over the Brewers. I remember earlier in the year, right as their season was getting started, Corbin Carroll, their sensational young player, got dropped off by his parents before his first game. So things like that happen when you're 23, 22, or below 30, where you still act like a regular person that is below 30. But I got a good chuckle out of that, that Brock Purdy still has a roommate at 23 years old, making almost $1 million, and is right now the talk of the NFL with what he's doing for the San Francisco 49ers. Let's go to Ryan. Ryan just dropped in Santa Barbara, so let's advance the conversation right now and get to a little Evan Neal, as this was a big story yesterday. So the Giants are off to a miserable start. The Giants right now are a team that is trending in the wrong direction. And the New York Giants were a remarkable story last year where the Giants were overachieving. No one would have thought they would have been a playoff team last year, let alone be in the second round of the postseason. Because you look at that roster, it's just simply not a talented roster. And this year, I was wondering with the Giants, would there be regression? And it was an obvious yes that there would be regression, but how much regression? And the Giants right now are in the midst of falling flat on their face because barring an upset in Miami or Buffalo, which I don't anticipate, the Giants are trending towards being a 1-5 football team. So when you're a bad football team, there's going to be deserved criticism and there's going to be a feeling and a sentiment around the team that is very negative. It's just natural. Especially when you're in a big media market like New York, there's a ton of coverage, and you're a football team that was the talk of the town last year, and now you're trending towards being a top five or a top 10 pick in the positioning of the NFL draft. So when you're in a situation like that, there's two ways that you could handle it. You could embrace all the negative noise and all the fair criticism and kind of just compartmentalize it, use it as motivation and try to prove people wrong, or you could fight back. And we've seen this just year in and year out. Whenever players go after fans, when they're on a bad football team, it doesn't end well for them. And I want to have a serious conversation about this, because when I first saw the comments by Evan Neal's, an offensive lineman, played at Alabama, first-round pick of the Giants, when I first saw those comments from Evan Neal yesterday, I'm not even a Giants fan, and I was irate, because I thought he was dehumanizing and talking down to people that cook food, that cook hot dogs and flip hamburgers as well. Because he said to the NJ.com, why would a lion concern himself with the opinions of a sheep? That person's that's commenting on my performance, what does he do? Flip hot dogs and hamburgers somewhere? Like, that's a really low blow, low class type of comment from Evan Neal. And when I saw that yesterday, I go, wow, you don't need to have the guts to go after people that flip pancakes, because right now Evan Neal doesn't know anything about pancakes, judging by his lack of blocking in the NFL, because he looks like a turnstile in Penn Station. And I was really agitated by these comments, because I go, who do you think you are? Where, yes, we know you're a football player. We know you were drafted high. We know you're making a good living, and you feel as if you're better than all of us, but you have to talk down to someone because they cook food? Just because you're not performing well? Just because you were getting abused on a football field and you got embarrassed the other night? Like, that just does not fly. There's a way to fight back. You don't go to people that cook food and basically spit in their faces and say, you're worth nothing. You know, I'm the lion. You're just a bunch of sheep. I'll devour you. And what do you know about football? And it'd be one thing if there was unfair criticism directed to an offensive lineman and he was actually playing well. Because a lot of times people can't analyze what goes on in the trenches. But Evan Neal has been a disaster this year. Evan Neal has been horrible. So I was really fired up yesterday. And then I saw that he issued an apology. And when an apology happens, you could accept the apology, or you could say, oh, what, did his agent write that for him and put it in his notes section and say, take a screenshot of this and then post it on Twitter? But the more and more I thought about this, I think it's just more of a product of society. And maybe I have a different perspective because I just turned 29 years old and I grew up in the most part with always a cell phone in my hand. And we kind of learned about social media. And hey, when I was in college, which was not that long ago, I graduated college in 2016, not everything was recorded. Now you go to college, everything's recorded. Everyone's trying to have the viral gotcha moment. But Evan Neal is 23, and there's a difference. And Evan Neal grew up with a cell phone in his hand, with Twitter, with Instagram, whatever other social medias, and he's always been praised. Evan Neal was a dominant player in high school. Evan Neal was a dominant player at Alabama. And this is the first time in this young man's career and this young man's life where the majority of people are telling you, you stink, you're bad, and also this football team is going nowhere. Because he was at an elite level and on elite teams in high school and college, and he's not used to losing. So yes, it can come off as like a spoiled brat a little bit when this is finally the time where you're not having things go your way and now you're kicking and screaming and not taking accountability. But I really just do believe that the public noise and the public pressure got to Evan Neal and he's never experienced this. And I think we could all relate where, yes, you shouldn't dehumanize someone. And you shouldn't go after people, oh, I'm better than you because I play football. And what do you know? You're just flipping hamburgers. You shouldn't do that. It's the wrong way to approach it. But I really do believe that this is just a 23-year-old kid that did something stupid. And he's on a bigger stage and a bigger platform than all of us. And if we all go back to when we were all 23, 22 years old, I'm sure we didn't operate things the right way when something didn't go our way. For Evan Neal, though, and it comes with the territory, it comes with the turf of being a professional athlete, just when you mess up and you do something stupid, the whole world sees it. So I don't want to say that I have sympathy for Evan Neal, but it is funny how in the course of 24 hours, because this story came out yesterday afternoon, late afternoon, so almost 24 hours, how my emotions have changed on it, where when it first came out yesterday, I'm like, bleep this dude. This dude's a jerk. Look at this pretentious you-know-what. And now I just think about it more. I believe that it's just a product of the era that he grew up in, and now it's the first time where a lot of this social media reaction is being very negative to him. Now, hopefully this is a learning experience, and all players should understand it's never smart. You're never going to win the battle of public opinion when you're going after fans, because fans, even though they could sometimes be ridiculous, when they boo, and this is what Evan Neal didn't get, when he's like, oh, what type of fan are you if you boo? You're just a bandwagon fan. When fans boo, it's because they're disappointed. When fans boo, it's because they pay money, they go to games, and it doesn't mean they're entitled, but they're booing because they want to see a better product. And ultimately, I know it's not the case with all fans, but a lot of fans' hearts are in the right place where they just want to see the team win. And you have a giant fan base that, yes, I know you could say, oh, they won two Super Bowls recently. The Giants have been one of those gold standard organizations with the two Super Bowls they won with Parcells, the two Super Bowls that they won with Tom Coughlin. But recently, like, there was a five-year stretch where the Giants, from a record standpoint, were worse than the Cleveland Browns. And now the Giant fan finally just got some hope, finally got brought back in. Oh, you got the right coach. You got the right general manager in Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. And after having 1 year of success where you get to the second round of the playoffs, there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of buzz with this football team. And right now they're face planting and they're plummeting. So when fans are booing you, Evan Neal, it's not because they want to see you perform poorly. It's not because they hate you. They just expect you to be better, and they expect the team to be better. I'll never forget when I was in Philly, and it was right after I was covering the Eagles. It was right after the Eagles won the Super Bowl and beat my Patriots. And their first game back, they're playing the Atlanta Falcons. Kickoff Thursday night football, kickoff the season. I remember I went to a golf tournament during the day, had a great sports day. Went to the BMW Championship in Aronimink. You know, got to see Tiger Woods, and then later that night went to the stadium in the press box in Philadelphia. And at the first half, the Eagles were not playing well. They weren't playing up to par, and the fans booed them. They booed them off the field in the first 30 minutes back after winning a Super Bowl. After the game, I was talking to Malcolm Jenkins, and Malcolm Jenkins said, I'm happy our fans didn't get spoiled with the Super Bowl championship. I'm happy our fans are booing, because they expect a certain standard, and we didn't deliver it to them in the first 30 minutes. And that clip should really get blasted to all these players right before they think about going after fans. Because sometimes fans could get nasty, fans could use offensive language, they could get racial, and all that stuff's wrong. And I would never condone that stuff. But when it's simply just booing, and the team's not playing well, and you have a fan sitting in section 322, that spent a ton of money to go to the game, and he's not happy with the product, and he just goes, boo, Evan Neal, play better, you stink. It's not rooted in a bad place. And I'm not saying anyone should love to get booed. I'm not saying anyone should enjoy that, because it's a crappy feeling when someone tells you you suck or they're booing you and they're upset with your performance. But to respond with it of, oh, you know, these guys flipping hamburgers, what the heck do they know? Or, oh, these fans are a bunch of bandwagon fans. There's a right way to go about it, and there's a wrong way to go about it. And Evan Neal went about it in the wrong way. But with that being said, now, like about 24 hours later, I just really do believe that this guy has never heard a ton of criticism, because he has been the lion, as he liked to say, in high school and also in college. And last year was a successful year for the team. But now this year it's been a disaster, and the offensive line has been one of the biggest problems why the Giants have been this bad, and Evan Neal has been horrible. And the offensive line position is not usually forgiven. You don't usually get a lot of public praise, because the only time we usually talk about the offensive line is when you're not playing well. So there's an understanding because of where he grew up in, always having a phone in his hand, and always seeing everything, why I could guess that he reacted off emotion and there was a lot coming his way, it doesn't make it right. Now, hopefully moving on in the future, when there are negative moments, he doesn't lash out the way that he lashed out yesterday. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. I think we got the phones back up and working. Let's go back to the Brock Purdy conversation on if he's a franchise quarterback or a system quarterback. We go to Ryan in Santa Barbara next up on CBS Sports Radio. Ryan, what's happening?
Zach, my man, what is going on out in New York? Of course, Brock Purdy is a franchise QB. Who holds the number one spot in passing yards right now? That is what, Mr. Relevant. And let me ask you this. If Jalen Hurts went to your awful New England Patriots with the mumbler, he would, too, be as awful as if Brock Purdy was there.
Well, I don't know about number that, three, because Jalen Hurts has a ton of mobility.
You put Philly ahead of the Niners.
Yes.
And they had a measly three touchdowns against the number 29th-ranked defense in the god-awful Commanders, who even I can't even imagine even having you have to watch this game tonight against Chicago. But you put Philly above the Niners?
Yes,
in number
because,
one?
Because they're both Niners undefeated, and they beat you last year. Because they're both undefeated and beat you last year. There's a tiebreaker there. I'm not saying the 49ers suck. I said they're the second best team in the league. You don't know that. You don't know that. The Eagles never got blown out once last year. How could you say that they would definitely beat them?
God. And then
answer the question. Answer the question. Answer the question how you know for sure that the 49ers would have won that game last year if they had Brock Purdy. Enlighten me. Enlighten me. How could you say hands down? Explain it. Don't just say hands down. Enlighten me. Explain.
More weapons, better defense, better offense. Look at the stats.
How do they have more weapons?
What do you mean?
Let me ask you this. Would you rather have Debo and Ayuk? Would you rather have Debo and Ayuk or AJ Brown and Devontae Smith?
Debo and Ayuk.
I would rather have AJ Brown and Devontae Smith.
Wait, Ayuk is leading the NFL as well. That guy is insane.
I'll give you McCaffrey, but would you rather have Jalen Hurts or Brock Purdy? Which one? Which one? Answer that question.
Wait, tell me.
Jalen Hurts or Brock Purdy? Which one would you rather have?
Brock Purdy.
Okay. That's because you're a 49ers fan. I'm not even an Eagles fan. You know, everyone accuses me of being an Eagles fan. I root for the Patriots, for crying out loud. All right? They beat my team in the Super Bowl. But if you look at this objectively, the 49ers had a great defense last year. The Eagles did too. Then on the offensive side of the ball, I'd rather have Jalen Hurts and Brock Purdy. Offensive line, the Eagles had like four Pro Bowlers on the offensive line last year. I'd rather have the Eagles' offensive line. Wide receivers, rather have the Eagles. Tight end, 49ers. Running back, 49ers. But this idea from 49ers fans that they would have blown out the Eagles last year if Brock Purdy was healthy, nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And that was my issue with Debo. If you want to say you would have beat them by a few points, I get it. But a blowout, that's just being disrespectful. It really is being disrespectful. All righty, we'll take a break here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, QBs that are heading for a divorce with their current teams, but standing by first with the latest CBS Sports Radio update is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So I broke up with my quarterback as a fan this past weekend. I put it out on social media, a photo of Mac Jones and I at the Super Bowl, where it looked like I could be his offensive lineman, you know, maybe his right tackle. And I just said, Mac, this isn't going to work. I know this relationship is over. And it felt very, like, free. Like, I feel like a free person now, where I don't have to think, oh, maybe they do this, maybe they do that, that they'll find a way to get the job done. With how important it is on that rookie contract to take advantage, I do believe the Patriots failed Mac Jones, where they wasted last year coming off a playoff year. And then this year, they don't get him a number one wide receiver. But when they drafted him, I never said he could be great. I thought he had the apex of being a good quarterback. But until you put the player in a position to succeed, we're never going to be able to evaluate that. And now, going on year number three, I think that ship has already sailed. Patriots probably going to a top 10 draft pick this year. So it does feel as if you're going to have, with this football team, them drafting a quarterback this year. So let's do, we could bypass the Patriots on this, Stu, but let's go through the other teams that people are maybe iffy on their quarterbacks and see if those fans are also going to be heading to a divorce as well.
The New York Jets.
Well, their actual quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, is coming back next year. So that means the future of Zach Wilson is one where you have to move on. And I know everyone's up in arms because Rodney Harrison said that Zach Wilson is a garbage quarterback. Even if you didn't like the way that it was done coming off Zach Wilson's best performance, there's been enough tape to suggest that Zach Wilson isn't the quarterback. And for Zach Wilson, he can't be on the Jets next year, even if Rodgers loves him. Because if Rodgers gets hurt again, you need a better backup quarterback, as we're seeing this year, where the Jets have a good roster, but Zach Wilson isn't able to find a way to lead them. Even outside of one really good game, they still lost the game. And we saw last year, right, when Zach was the quarterback, they benched him and the whole locker room did turn against him.
The Atlanta Falcons.
I do believe next year the Falcons will have a new quarterback. Or bare minimum, they'll have more competition around Desmond Ridder. Because this Falcons team can win the NFC South this year. And you look at that team, the offensive line has to get better. But you have Bijan Robinson. You have Tyler Allgeier. You have Drake London and Kyle Pitts. That's an attractive destination. Like, we've seen quarterbacks recently, Brady leave the Pats to go to the Bucs. We've seen Stafford leave the Lions to go to the Rams, right? Even Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, even though that has not worked out, they become available. Rodgers this past year. If you're a veteran quarterback and you're looking for a better destination, well, there's really no dominant team in the NFC South right now, and you have a ton of talent with the good offensive-minded head coach in Arthur Smith, I do believe the Falcons are an attractive destination. And Desmond Ridder, I think he's just a guy that could be an average quarterback. I don't think he has a ceiling of being very good or great.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
I kind of feel as if Kenny Pickett is trending more in the category of Mac Jones than someone that's going to be a franchise quarterback, where you could question the Steelers' approach. Matt Canada shouldn't be the offensive coordinator, right? The offensive line has been up and down. I know Freiermuth is hurt, but you have a good tight end. Najee Harris, the last 2 years, has put up 1,000-yard rushing seasons, but he has not clicked, and he doesn't look like he's going to be a long-term great running back. You have Pickens, who's there, who's solid. Like, there should be enough where we should see more out of Kenny Pickett, but I feel as if Kenny Pickett's going to be very similar to Mac Jones, whether it's the environment or his lack of ability. We're in a few years from now, the rookie contracts are going to come and go, and you're going to be saying, wow, the Steelers need a new quarterback.
The Denver Broncos.
I think after the 2024 season, this is going to be it for Russell Wilson in Denver. I do think he'll play okay enough individually where they'll be able to justify bringing him back next year and then have the dead cap go down with having him on the roster for another season. But with that being said, you know how this goes. The Broncos are horrible this year. They're probably going to be horrible again next year. People already turned on Russ, and deservedly so. The next person they're going to turn on is Sean Payton, and Sean's going to get the luxury of bringing in a new quarterback. So I think that they try to salvage this marriage. Like, they're in couples therapy right now, where you know that probably you're going to the divorce route, but maybe there's just some little minuscule chance that you're able to save the relationship. I think this is just another year of couples therapy. And then after 2024, Russell Wilson will be, I guess, on a new team, or he'll be somewhere else, but it won't be with the Denver Broncos.
The Chicago Bears.
Yeah, Justin Fields is getting traded after this offseason because the Bears are going to blow this up. Ryan Poles won't be back next year as the general manager. Matt Eberflus is even Peter King speculating that he could get fired after tonight's game up against the Commanders. I don't really believe that, but the Bears are headed towards having two top five picks in the 2024 NFL draft. Even if there's questions, is it the organization or is it more so on field? You're going to do a complete reset where you get rid of the head coach, the GM, and the quarterback. So Justin Fields will be divorced from the Bears after this season.
The Tennessee Titans.
Ryan Tannehill will be on a new team next year. I think he's someone that could compete for a starting job. I don't think he's going to go somewhere where he's an automatic starting quarterback. Maybe one of those situations where you don't want to go to your young quarterback right away, so you play Ryan Tannehill, who's a consummate professional. He had his opportunity to win. He did better than what anyone could have expected in Tennessee. eventually replacing Marcus Mariota, but he's reached his ceiling in Tennessee, and Tennessee brought in a new general manager this past offseason. Mike Vrabel is still there. His contract is coming up as well. I believe Ryan Tannehill is on a new team this time next year.
The New York Giants.
And I think after the 2024 season, because really this is a two-year deal for Daniel Jones, the way that the salary is structured, I do believe Daniel Jones gets one more year. I do believe Daniel Jones will be more bad than good, and Daniel Jones after the 2024 season will get cut or get traded by the New York Football Giants.
The Minnesota Vikings.
I think there's a 50-50 chance Kirk Cousins can be back next year with the Minnesota Vikings. I don't think it will be by design. I don't think it will be their preference to bring him back. You got to remember he's in the final year of his contract. The question just becomes, can you find better than Kirk Cousins? And I do believe the average football fan will say, yeah, of course. Kirk Cousins is just a really good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. But the Vikings have some pieces there. And this year they're off to a horrible start. We know last year they won 13 games and they overachieved. I didn't think they would be this bad this year. You knew that there was going to be some natural regression. But you look at Kirk Cousins, if they can't immediately find that next guy, I could see them giving Kirk another year or two on a contract, or maybe it's like 1 year and then you could get out of it after, after 1 year, and it's really like a 2 year kind of contract. I do believe that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell are going to look to get a divorce after this year, but sometimes you're going to go back to old reliable Kirk Cousins because you know he can be good to just really prevent this ship from sinking. But you could argue right now that the ship is sinking with the Minnesota Vikings. So I would lean more that he's not back, but it wouldn't shock me if he is back because I just don't know if they're going to be able to immediately find the next right guy this upcoming offseason. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Drew Bledsoe is going to join us coming up 25 minutes from now, but when we come on back, are the Bears heading to an 0-17 season? And also, we have two undefeated teams remaining in the NFL after the Dolphins did go down last weekend. Will either the Eagles or the 49ers make history and go undefeated this year? We're talking that on the other side. Zach Gelb here with you, but where else? CBS Sports Radio.